Good evening. Welcome, everyone, joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Clip Technical Question and Answer Net. I am Roy AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Jason WF2N will be your co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. Now, the purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its club webpages. Also, we offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club website. The link can be found on the front page of our club website in orange colored type. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, www.kc2rc.com. Members, as well as non-members, are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our website. No question is too simple. No question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your name, your call sign, and whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try my best to provide an answer, and Jason WF2N will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment and, when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. As always, if anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let me know either here or at the email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I'd like to introduce my co-host for this net, Jason WF2N. Good evening, Jason.
Good evening, Roy, and good evening, everybody listening.
Hey, well, this is our technical net for tonight. If anyone has any questions or any topics or wants to say something, now's the time. Just hit the push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, we're going to have a quiet night, I guess. We'll try one more time. Sometimes people come a little late. Sometimes people aren't quite ready with a question, but, we'll give you a little bit of time and an opportunity to either come up with a question you might have or comment you might want to make or what have you. We do this twice a month on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. And so, once again, I will ask the people out there if they're so inclined, if they have any questions or any comments tonight for the technical nut. Okay, well, I mean, if this was an amateur radio and I could play music, I would probably break into some kind of rendition of The Sounds of Silence. Once again, this is Roy, Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra with the Kings County Radio Club. Technical net, which is held every second and fourth Wednesday of each month, it's that time again. And so I'm once again asking people. We've had this once before where everyone seems to have other things to do, we just kind of shut it down early, and we save the puzzle for the next time. I don't know, sometimes people take a little bit of time to collect their question or they arrive a little late. That's understandable. I'll throw out a subject if anyone is so inclined. I've noticed a lot of activity about the newest version of the Anytone ATD878 UV. They're now selling them with Bluetooth modules included. And just curious if anyone has seen them, or Betty had owned them, or has any opinion of them. Okay, well, it doesn't seem to be a heck of a lot of activity on the repeater tonight, so once again, I will drag my feet before I will kind of hit the eject button on this, because I'd like to give people a chance. You know, we make ourselves available twice a month for this, and I find it an enjoyable experience when I'm able to kind of share things with other people. I don't know if any of you people out there, assuming there are people listening, who frequent the Kings County Radio Club's forum. The website, www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, has a forum page. Most people apparently don't really like these forum pages, so there isn't that much activity. And recently, a few days ago, someone actually came by and left a couple of questions on the forum pages, not particularly amateur radio-based. One had to do with the technology involved in remote control model receivers. He was asking how to give it power, because he could see a whole bunch of legends on the inputs and outputs of the receiver module, but he couldn't for the life of him figure out how you actually put power into it to make it work. So if anyone wants to kind of go over to the forum, they can see that, and they can see my answer, or they can see other things on the web pages. So let's try one last time. If anyone out there has any questions or comments or topics for the technical net tonight, now's the time, or else we'll just kind of hit the eject button, and we'll hope for better things next time.
WS2N with the comment.
Jason, please comment. It's lonely here.
Thanks, Roy. So not particularly amateur radio related, but I was wondering if you had read the article on fizz.org about the new property of light that was discovered. The name of the property here, self torque. Is the name of the property. Have you heard of this?
Oh, I haven't. That sounds interesting. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are sort of like torque. There's a rotation of polarization of electromagnetism. So I guess theoretically you could describe that as torque, but I assume that this is something that's a little bit different than that.
So it's described as associated to a temporal variation of the orbital angular momentum. What that is there. I think they shoot they fire lasers at a cloud of argon gas, but the lasers are at different orbital angular momentum. And they noticed that the light showed up on an object as a crescent moon, and they noticed that there was some movement in there, so it was torquing slowly.
So that's very interesting. That's very similar to the somewhat esoteric concept of the electrons have spins. They're said to either have up or down, right or left, however you want to describe binary conditions, spins of one half. Electrons and protons and neutrons have one half spins. Photons have a full spin. If gravitons exist, they have a zero spin. And if you think of it, unfortunately, as orbital mechanics, you get a headache, because if you put the amount of angular momentum on an electron spin, it seems to violate the relativity in it's spinning faster than the speed of light would limit it to. And the reason why is because the quantum spin that's described for these things is not a mechanical spin that we think of, but it's basically a very similar to this concept, apparently. It has to do more with the angular momentum of the object itself, but the angular momentum of the angle of polarization of the wave equation of the electron. So this strikes me as an interesting corollary of that in the realm of photons. So that's exciting new information.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting read. At the end of the article, they say that this could potentially lead to the development of devices that make use of manipulating extremely tiny materials. So I wonder what that would be, nanoparticles or something smaller.
Things that they're experimenting with is the entire field of photonics, because electronics is kind of reaching a quantum limitation in how you could shrink down silicon or semiconductors in order to have, these chips now have billions of integrated circuits, have billions of transistors embedded in them, and when you get to a point where it's only 10 or 20 atoms long, you have things like tunneling and such, which screws everything up. So they're looking at innovative ways of manipulating things. They're looking at something called spintronics, in which it's not the current that gets flipped, but the actual quantum spin state of the electron. And they're also looking at photonic devices that work with photons and light beams and such. So perhaps they're looking at this being some aspect that they could utilize as different states that they could, turn into binary ones and zeros and manipulate as a smaller and smaller, electronic type devices that will run, more processes faster than we presently can. So it's sort of amazing how technology just gets more and more complicated, and we find out all these little esoteric things. It's like I describe it as a big onion. It has a lot of layers. It gets a lot more confusing as we go deeper and down the rabbit hole. But thank you for mentioning it. I usually wander past fizz.org. It's one of my favorite websites, but I haven't been on it for a week or two. So thanks for pointing that out to me.
Pleasure, Roy. This is WS.
Once again, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra Roy here with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. And we can try our best to discourse about almost any aspect of science or technology. We try and keep it anchored to amateur radio, because that seems to be the topic that most people who have access to a repeater are interested in talking about. But we can go beyond that if anyone is so inclined. But all we need is a curious mind out there. So once again, if anyone has any questions or topics for the Technical Net tonight, now's the time. Give us your first name, give us the call sign, and we'll see what we can do. Okay, it seems that everyone has something else to do tonight. That's unfortunate. If Wednesday nights aren't good nights for people, I guess we could consider some other night, or I don't know exactly what would be the most opportune for everyone. So I will try one last time to see if I can elicit any kind of participation out there. I know we have a few people who unfortunately can't attend on Wednesdays, so they look forward to listening to the archive file. Doesn't seem like they're going to enjoy this one too much, but what can you do? Once again, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra Roy here with the King County Radio Club Technical Question and Answer Net. If you have any questions of any technical nature, any scientific concepts, and you want to bounce them around, this is the place. So, once again, and possibly for the last time tonight, I will drop the mic and ask if anyone out there has any comments or questions or topics or what have you. So now's your time. This is AC2GS.
Good evening, Roy. Don't jump out your window. There's somebody listening.
Thank you, Howard. I wasn't intending to jump out my window. I was just intending to turn the radio off, and I don't know. know, pick up a good book or something. Howard, do you have any particular question or topic or comment? I mean, I appreciate that you're out there listening, but this thing runs on the fuel of questions. So if you have anything, feel free.
Anytone 878 with the Bluetooth. Ironically, I just watched a video. Somebody posted from Texas. I've seen him before. I forget his call sign. And he was reviewing it, and he felt that you would need a headset. Merely having the PTT on Bluetooth, you still had to shout into the radio and be able to hear the speaker on the radio. So that's one little problem with that.
That's if you're only in it for the push-to-talk button. I think what most people had in mind is you using it with both the push-to-talk button, perhaps, but more importantly, with a kind of microphone speaker Bluetooth device, especially cars and other places where you walk in there and the microphone picks up your voice and you're away to the horse races and what have you. So I understand that the speaker is very loud. If you're yelling across the room at the microphone, yeah, you're gonna have problems. So I don't think that that's what they had in mind when they came up with the little Bluetooth activation button. I think that they meant to tend to pair it with a microphone speaker assembly, either a headset, as you mentioned, or some cars come equipped with Bluetooth devices like that, and there are probably other options. I'm curious if you can pair it with a PC and interface the audio through the PC. I guess that's not the easiest thing to figure out, and Windows changes with every build, so sometimes the answer is probably yes, and other times no.
No, he didn't mention anything about that. I guess what they're doing with this Anytone, they keep building on the same radio, making you buy the same thing again, keep upgrading, and really nothing changes. But he did point out that it's an ATRS of some nature, and the other DMR radios don't. So that's one of the features you're looking for. I have the 878, the 868, one from before. And you're right about the speaker, it is quite loud.
The latest 878 UV Plus, I think it's called, is that not only does it do digital ATRS, which a lot of DMR devices will do digitally, I understand it's capable of analog ATRS as well. So that's the kind of extra feature. Theoretically, when they first suggested that they were going out today, features, I haven't seen any one review, I think, in Amazon, where the guy is very unhappy because he had problems comparing Bluetooth. And he said, if you're going to pay for this simply because you want to get the Bluetooth, it may not work for you. So that's kind of always been, unfortunately, the problem with Bluetooth. There are so many different protocols for Bluetooth and machines that pair with them one way and not in the other. I tried to pair my computer with my iPad. It says I probably where they both do it, and it seems it says that it doesn't work for that device and it fails. So I'm hoping it's just my build of Windows 10 and eventually things will change. But we'll see. That's usually the issue with the parents, because I'm going to get built. here with a frequently paired device. This is just the first thing I've tried to pair my phone with my rifle through their outputs and see what's going on. If I'm just interested about a topic and I do a online search, then I start to look at the number of views. And if you'll notice that there are a whole bunch of YouTubes where there's, you know, there's 10 or 12 or 15 views. Unless it was dropped the other day, that's usually a very bad sign. I don't know, also, that there's a lot of YouTubes where the people, I assume, come from a different country and they don't speak the language very well, so rather than speak it heavily accented, they run it through a voice synthesizer, and most of them are not quite ready for prime time. So you get these weirdly, incorrectly inflected synthetic voices doing presentations. I don't know if you've experienced that joy in YouTube.
I experienced that in college, in classes where there was an Indian professor speaking some form of English that is really hard to understand the technical subject. So I guess that's what you mean. There is a British presenter now with all these people, does electronics very well. Talks very fast. I was watching were on the up amps.
Spatial amplifiers, that's an interesting topic. I'm kind of rifling through my brain. Most of the guys, for some odd reason, who do electronics, at least in my experience, tend to more often come from, they don't come from the United States, they tend to more often come from either Australia or Canada. There's a lot of people who use say the word solder in a different way. They call it solder. And they also have a weird way, some of them, of saying farad. You know, microfarad, nanofarad. They put the accent off and they call them farad. So I've noticed that. But there's not that many, at least in my experience, English. The closest I can recall of a guy that I listen to is lately I've been fascinated by subwoofer amplifiers. They're row upon row of MOSFETs, and there's a power converter that raises the power from the 12 volts of the alternator, and one of the particular guys who's always fixing subwoofer power modules tends to come from England. But other than that, a lot of them, Mr. Carlson's lab is Indian, and there's a couple of guys, I think it's the EEV blog or something, he comes from Australia.
In particular, this guy could have been from Australia too, I don't know. But it was a British accent. By the way, how did you make out at the session? How many people showed up to take those tests?
Three people come. Two people didn't have the licenses, and they earned their technician's license. One of them came to a meeting at the club a couple of months ago and said that he was going to come back this August 7th, which is our next monthly club meeting, and pay his dues and become a member. I'm looking forward to that. The other gentleman got his technician's license. And a gentleman came with a general license, and he upgraded to an extra license. So we were three for three. It was a nice time.
Somebody should... That building was air conditioned.
Surprisingly, I was a little bit concerned because you can't really depend on Wesley House. It does have air conditioning. Sometimes it's left on. Sometimes it's shut off. When we got there, unfortunately, the doors were all locked, so we had to get the security crew to come by with a key. But when they opened the door, we got a blast of nice cold air. The air conditioner was going with no one in the room. So not exactly great for the electrical bill, but we all enjoyed the cool air from it. So it was a pleasure. In retrospect, I've been kind of thinking in the back of my head that I don't know if we can rely on that. We might want to figure out something during the summer months when we're doing the VE sessions to have them done across the street in the hospital. It's definitely going to be air-conditioned all the time. But it was fortuitous. It was very pleasant, and we had no real problems. The new general exam came out, but no one really needed that this time. And, of course, the gentleman running the VE session, James, WB2FMH, actually got a phone call about 1:30. The sessions begin at 1 o'clock. He got a phone call, something like 1:30 or 1:40, from a guy in Queens who wanted to know if he could still get there. And, you know, we kind of told him that, you know, he kind of missed the boat, unfortunately. I think he wanted to bring his young son. He wanted to know how young you could possibly be to take a license. And we informed him that there's no age requirement, fortunately. There's one young kid out there who's 5 years old who got himself a tech license. He couldn't read the questions. His father had to read the questions for him, but he was able to answer the technical questions and got himself a tech license.
You mentioned that once. 5 years old, that's amazing. And he has tried. He couldn't read the questions, but he knows the answer. Maybe he should have been on that 21 quiz show back in the 50s.
I mean, I hope this bodes well for him. I've sort of seen, the ARRL and QST love these types of human interest stories. They love to show you the youngest ham imaginable. And some of them go on, you know, they continue in the interest of the field, and they get electrical engineering degrees, and they go off there, and they have a career and a wonderful time. There's one guy, I think his last name is Rapp. He's one of those guys who started off, I think he was something like 8 years old when he got his amateur radio license, and he's still very important in the amateur radio community. He became a high school teacher. He weighs about 350 pounds. You know, not quite, you know, I probably would have imagined he would go farther and do more, but, you know, whatever.
You know, it's even like in acting, you find out a lot of the child actors never continued. Either they tried or they failed or just nothing happened. They didn't bother with it anymore. Like these one-hit wonder groups, musical groups, and you never hear from them again.
And also probably an important aspect that we don't keep in mind too much is what was the motivating force behind it. When, I don't know, when you're 5 years old, I mean, I sort of remember when I was 5 years old, I had the attention span of a flea. So maybe this is more a case of a father wanting to kind of fulfill some kind of dream that he has rather than the five-year-old desperately wanting to have QSOs on 80 meters with, you know, 70-year-old guys sitting around talking about fishing.
His father a ham? Because if his father was a ham, he could allow him to use the equipment while he's around, I believe.
There's such a thing as third party. If you're licensed, you can allow anyone to operate your equipment with your privileges as long as you're present and they use your call sign. I don't think I've ever heard of a relatively young person getting a license who doesn't have a close family member who has a license as well. That because, you know, I mean, how else would they actually do that? I mean, you know, it's one thing for a five-year-old or an eight-year-old to kind of pass the exam, but to start from scratch to go hunting down a local amateur radio operator or attack a library for the technical books, I think is a little bit beyond almost every five- or eight-year-old. So almost every story I've ever heard was either their father was a ham, or their brother, older brother was a ham, or maybe occasionally their uncle was a ham. Very few, their aunt was a ham or their mother was a ham.
That's the only way it could happen. Unless he sees a movie, the enemy in a movie, he gets interested. He sees a little kid take a hold of a radio in an emergency or something like that. It would be the only other way I could imagine he'd get involved in it.
I guess so, but really, that doesn't exist anymore. As far as I can tell, the last time I actually read in a book about a kid who used a radio, it was written by Robert Heinlein, and it was published in something like 1948. You know, have spaceship will travel, have spaces will travel, have something like that. He used to write science fiction for young audiences, and he would include young people as the cast in the book. And a lot of times, one of the kids would be an amateur radio operator. So that was amusing to see. But again, you're talking about 1948. It's been a while since 1948. So young 5 and 8 year olds don't see hams anywhere. Most adults don't see hams anywhere, unfortunately. Every so often, the popular media, like NCIS, did something where amateurs were portrayed as really sad people living in their mother's basement. Sort of like a cross between a computer geek, a little bit of an amateur, and a citizen's bander. They had handles and they were pirates and all kinds of nonsense. It had to be written by a person who had absolutely no experience whatsoever with anyone who was ever an amateur radio operator. But that's the culture. We've kind of passed beyond hams as far as the media and the culture is concerned these days.
Back on Sunday, I got one DXer. Came in for about 1 minute from Missouri. There were very few people local, and he was the only DX. And the band seemed to be dead. I don't know if that guy was kidding that he was in Missouri or what. Call signs worked out to Missouri. Somebody looked it up. So, found that odd. I think there are more openings than people realize. Just nobody on the air trying it. That's
AC2GS. Well, it's sort of the chicken and the egg, and I can understand it. If you don't definitely know that that propagations are good, especially this time of the sunspot cycle, as far as 6 meters and 10 meters, a lot of hams don't even bother to go there anymore because the chance is 1 out of 100 that you'll get anything other than local traffic. So they don't bother to try, and then if they don't bother to try, then the occasional propagation jump where you skip and you actually can talk to places other than locally don't present themselves. So, yeah, you'll sort of see that during test time, that if the propagation is not great but a little bit active, suddenly you'll hear a bunch of guys that you're not used to hearing. But again, chicken and egg. I could sort of understand. I mean, personally, every so often I'll talk to someone and they'll say, have an experience on 6 meters. And I've had so little experience finding anything useful on 6 meters, I've stopped really looking. You know, I guess when the sunspot cycles change and they go up, I'll be more aware and I'll look at it. And, you know, they call it the magic band, but right now it's the desert band.
I never heard anything on 6 meters except the Staten Island repeater, FM repeater. That's it. And do you ever use the 2 meter SSD?
No, I haven't. I have used AM. There used to be something called, well, there still is actually something called the Dinosaur Net on 145 megahertz on amplitude. much. I'm not really set up for it. Really, if you want to do it well, you should really have a Yagi and have a rotator on it and be able to point it at places to get that little oomph of gain. Whereas both of my UHF, VHF antennas are isolinears that are omnidirectional.
If the 2-meter FM is open, does that mean the AM is open too?
Yeah. Electromagnetic waves don't really care how you modulate them. It's all dependent upon their frequency. Two signals close enough will experience the same propagation condition.
And a good way to test would be with the KWO 35, you know, the weather stations. I know early in the morning you get stations from down south. A lot of times in the summer there's a 16255 like New York City, but it's, I think, in Maryland, and it can come in. I thought that KWO 35 went back on the air about a month ago, 3 weeks ago, but it was a station in Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, you'll notice these interesting propagation skips every so often, even on some of your favorite repeaters, where rather than hear your usual repeater, at least for me, I will hear something on frequency as my usual repeaters, but with a different signal strength. You know, something like W2VL usually comes in around 10 to 20 dB above S9. And all of a sudden, I'll start to get this ID coming out at something like an S6 or an S7. And if I listen very closely and there's a lot of noise in the background, it's either from Pennsylvania or it's from Connecticut. So it's kind of skipping around. So, yeah, you can have that. It happens, and occasionally they use the same PL tones, and it wreaks havoc with everyone.
We have a competitor in Connecticut with different CT, CSS. Otherwise, I think a few weeks ago, Joe, AC2AE, was talking to them in the middle of OnNet, or when OnNet ended.
Yeah, I mean, there's only some frequencies allocated, so these different frequency allocation committees will kind of divvy things up, and most of the time, the propagation conditions won't allow, one repeater frequency to hit the other one. Occasionally that doesn't quite work out. So, especially when one repeater is more quiet than the other one, you have those breakthroughs from more foreign repeaters.
That was the problem in the early days of radio, that stations had to constantly change frequencies, change transmission strength and patterns, reorient antennas. As more stations came on the air, there was no real organization to make it all work out right. They had to do it by experimentation. That's how some stations won three or four frequencies in a few years.
There was a lot of jockeying for position, and if you were very fortunate, you were the owner of a clear channel that the FCC decided that some stations with ridiculous amounts of powers could sort of own a certain frequency across a swath of land, so that at night, one-third of America could hear from that signal. So there are still probably clear channel frequencies out there from the FCC. But, radio is not quite what it used to be. One of the odd questions of the guy who left some questions on the forum, he asked two questions. One was about a remote control module receiver, and the other was asking anyone's opinion of the political bent of radio broadcasters. I'm not quite sure what either of them really had to do with amateur radio, but, you know, that's about the only activity our forums have had in the last 4 or 5 months.
The forums on our website you're talking about?
I set up some forums about 4 or 5 years ago. You know, they start, there's a newbie one, there's a technical one, there's something like 5 different categories, and I put a welcoming message into each of them, and I advertise the fact, and a couple people put a couple of things up over the last 4 years, and pretty much not much else has been going on. So some guy apparently logged on and saw it and had some questions about remote control model devices and decided what the heck and posted it on the technical portion of the forum.
Does he happen to be a member? One of the 75 members?
I don't think so. I think you can actually get some kind of account name and password in order to use the forums. I'm not quite sure, but I think Mitch set that up because the guys, whatever his name is that he left on the forum, it wasn't the call sign and it wasn't a name that rings any bell whatsoever.
Somebody just passing through. Never know. Usually you have to have some identification. I don't just let anybody leave a message, leave a question, even a question, let alone answer something. Like there is a website for meteorologists. Only licensed meteorologists can leave comments, but anybody can read it.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how you set up the security measures. I don't recall the requirements, Mitch. I know if you don't check into it, if you just go to our website and you don't use your registered account, you can see the forum questions, but you can't respond to them and you can't enter your own. You have to log in with some approved account. So my guess is that Mitch allows people to register without joining the club, and so this was probably someone who had done that.
Of course, sometimes I like to leave a comment, but I don't want to even bother registering on any kind of website or forum, and I just skip it. You know, I just say what I would have written, like say it in my head to myself, that's all. I don't want to sign up for every single form. You get so many chunk emails after. I can't control it. I get about 100 chunk emails a day as it is.
Certainly can understand that. I mean, sometimes people set up kind of temporary email addresses to get access to things, and then they expire after 24 or 48 hours. There's a bunch of ways around it. You know, so some people have to kind of say their 2 cents worth. Some people can just say it to themselves. I mean, unfortunately, I tend to be the type of guy when, if I'm reading a book that's been written recently where I can figure out how to get to the guy, there's an email somewhere, and if I find that he made a mistake and said something incorrect, I'll email him and tell him that I think he was wrong on something like that. And I've actually had a couple of people responding to me. That was amusing.
Are you thankful or argumentative?
I think generally if you're going to be pissed, you're simply not going to send the guy any response. You just kind of swear under your breath. It was 2 guys, one guy said that he discovered that after he sent it to be published, and he, if there's going to be a second printing, he plans to change it. And there was another guy who thanked me for finding the mistake, although he had said the same thing at 2 or 3 different places. He had kind of cut and pasted the same stuff on websites that he authored articles, and then he just cut and pasted it into a book. And he mentioned that there was I think he was talking about the energy storage molecules for cells. There's something called ATP, adenosine triphosphate. That's kind of like a chemical battery that runs our cells. So for some odd reason, he said that there is millions of them in a human body, where there's really probably millions of them in each cell, and there are billions of cells in the human body. So he was off by a factor of 9, 10, something like that. And so he was very polite, and he thanked me for pointing it out, and he said, if he gets a chance on a reprint, he'll fix it.
Adenosine triphosphate, ATP, right, that's energy in the body, right?
It's kind of the universal energy storage. It stores the energy of when they burn fat or they burn sugar, and they don't immediately use it for biochemical synthesis or activating ion channels and membranes and such. What they do is they add a phosphate to adenosine a diphosphate. They add another phosphate, and that bond has a lot of nice potential energy. So when you pull off that phosphate, you get energy that you could use synthesizing some other biological function. So the two major batteries in the body are something called NADH and ATP.
Does that have anything to do with the basal metabolism?
It has to do with all cellular metabolism. It's coupled to oxidative reduction. Basically, any kind of food that you burn is going to go through some stage where it's adding phosphates on ADP and turning it into ATP, or by adding a proton onto NAD and making it NADH. So there's a couple of universal things that are so efficient and well designed that it's been with biology since bacteria.
Interesting. So is there, on hot days and humid days, is there anything special you can do to keep your energy up?
I don't have energy up. What you sort of want to do, because we're warm-blooded, we maintain a very narrow level of temperature. We're not designed like a lizard who can exist at wide swings of temperature and sort of not work too well when it's too cold and not work too well when it's too hot. We have a very narrow level. We're optimized at that. And so we have all these autoregulatory systems where the blood that circulates changes paths dependent upon temperature. If you expose yourself to a lot of cold weather, your core temperature will protect itself by constricting the blood vessels around your skin, and you'll hold on to your heat. Whereas if it's hot, you'll dilate all the vessels that go into your skin, and you get kind of red and blotchy, and that gives you a little bit more efficient way of venting off of the heat. And then, of course, there's perspiration. You increase the amount of water on your skin from perspiration, and the energy of evaporation cools you down. So there's a whole bunch of autoregulatory systems that we sort of take for granted most times that keeps us temperature regulated. You certainly don't want to overexert yourself, because when you exert yourself, you produce waste heat, and if it's hot already, then you have an even more difficult problem dissipating the additional heat into an already hot environment.
Wintertime alcoholic drinks would not be good. Is that true?
Yeah, that's one of the things that people always get wrong. Unfortunately, one of the many things that alcohol does is it's a vasodilator. it dilates those blood vessels I mentioned in your skin. So initially, you feel warmer because your core temperature is being dissipated over your skin, where you feel temperature more than any other place. So initially, you feel warmer, but you're actually losing more heat that way. And all things being equal, you have less of a chance surviving with the addition of alcohol. But, you know, that doesn't stop people from drinking when they're cold or when they're warm or when they're happy or when they're sad.
So you have a test question for us tonight?
Indeed. We have a technical puzzle for tonight. The question, as listed on the club website, is one of the main causes of fading is, and then you have four choices. So again, the question is, one of the main causes of fading is A, the time difference between the transmitting and the receiving station, B, an instability in the transmitted frequency of the signal, C, the same signal reaching the receiver by two different paths, and D, change in the beam heading at the transmitter. So those are the four choices for one of the main causes of fading that one hears listening to transmission.
Well, at first, I don't have a wall in front of my head. I'd say it was, I think what you said, what was C? What was the answer for C?
I think I might have heard Jason in the background, so after I say this, let's pause for you know, 5-10 seconds, and if Jason wants to say something, or if someone else was trying to break through. The third answer C, is the same signal is reaching the receiver by two different paths. So let's see if there's someone else who wants to talk about this.
Alpha Charlie, 2 Alpha Echo, Roy, I'd just like to check in.
Very good, Joe. Consider yourself checked in.
I do have a topic if you guys have time for when we're done with this.
Hey, Joe. So back to you, Howie. Any thoughts on what the answer to what is the one of the main causes of fading?
I think the answer to C would be what caused ghosts in the early days of television, with your rabbit ears and all that. Signals were being bounced off buildings, and the signal path was changed, and they arrived at a phase at your antenna, made a ghost. What were the other three choices?
A was the time difference between the transmitting and receiving stations. B was instability in the transmitted frequency of the signal. C, as I said before, was the same signal reaching the receiver by two different paths. And D was changes in the beam heading at the transmitter.
I'll stick with C, right or wrong. God judge me, right or wrong.
Someone out there?
Right now, Kilo Golf 3 Charlie, Milan from Briarwood, Queens. I'm also picking C, the multi-path answer.
Very good. Milan and Howard, yes, both of you are right. As Milan mentioned, it's usually called multipath. When a signal reflects off another object and then comes at more than one path, usually the distance traveled is different for each of the reflected signals. Sometimes, if you're really lucky, it will constructively interfere with each other and add, but more often it will destructively interfere and you'll get fading. So that's one of the main causes of fading, is multipath causing that. There's other causes that aren't included in this. One that I like to point out to people is that a lot of times, especially when DXing, and you hear people kind of fading in and fading out, fading in and fading out, Not uncommonly, what's happening is that the polarization angle, horizontal versus vertical, is not locked in stone. Just because a person's transmitting antenna is a vertical one doesn't necessarily mean that when it finally gets to you, the signal is polarized vertically. It can be rotated. So a lot of times in the ionosphere, there is a variable rotation of the polarization angle that can be interpreted by most people as fading. Fortunately, I've had the experience of having both a vertical and horizontal antenna, and I can sort of hearing the signal move from my right ear with a vertical antenna is feeding to the left with a horizontal and back and forth again. So that's another cause for fading. But Malen and Howard are right. The answer is C, the same signal reaching receivers by two different paths or good old multipath. So, Joe, what's your topic for tonight?
Kind of sort of a topic. I was just curious. The new FD3D is coming out soon. HRO is already selling it. Kind of selling it. You're paying for it, and they don't quite have it yet. So I guess you could pay for it, and when it does come in, you could purchase it. Or I'm sorry, you can. I guess they'll send it out to you. But there were some new features that I was looking at on the, I guess, the Yaesu webpage. And, they got some pretty interesting stuff. It's called CAM, and it's called Club Channel Activity Monitor. And it's new. They've got the Bluetooth that's also new. What else? It's also, it can be used as a node radio, like the 2D. So that's a pretty good function. And I was just curious what everybody really thought about it. And one thing, if you guys do look, I'm not sure if this actually, if I'm reading this correctly over there, but it says voice recording function for the receive and transmit. And if it's got that, that's I kind of like that feature. So I was wondering what you thought about it, what everybody else's ideas or thoughts were about it as well. AC2,
AD,
back over to net control.
Yes, Joe, I've been following it, and I particularly like the idea that you can put in a 32 gigabyte micro SD card and record both your transmission and receive signals. So that's a very nice feature. As far as the Bluetooth, that's a nice feature as well. Earlier tonight, we were talking about the Anytone ATD878UP, I think it is, or I think it's the ATD878. It also is includes a Bluetooth module. So this may be a trend which hopefully will continue as time goes on, especially in, say, handy talkie models. I don't know if it'll go into base stations that much. But it's an interesting thing, and it'll be interesting to hear your review of it when you finally get your hands on it. I really wish handy talkies had better rejection, because what I have a problem with my handy talkie is I get desensing. So a lot of times I can't really follow the feed from the repeater because your nearby signal desenses my little handy talkie. And my guess is that the 3 is not going to handle the front end any different. It's kind of the way most handy talkies are designed, to have a really open front end and have a lot of gain, because it's not really designed for environments where there's a lot of RF around.
Alpha Charlie 2, Alpha Echo. You know, you're not the first person that has told me that about the receive on it. I haven't experienced it yet, but then again, I haven't really taken it to many places. And is this, are you hooking this up to your outdoor antenna, or is this just with the handy the antenna that comes with the radio that's on it? And Because really, I haven't experienced that at all, and I'm going to actually try it right now.
Okay, that's what I found. I have it hooked into my the GP3 that's stuck on my my little ladder at the corner of my yard. And at times, when I first got it out of the box, I kind of noticed it almost immediately, and I was able to use the attenuation setting to drop the signal strength enough, and I was able to hear things. But lately, it's kind of been hit or miss. I have a variable attenuator, and I tried to kind of adjust the input signal to not overload my front end, but apparently, if I do it enough to descend, to stop it from desensing, I also inject more attenuation to the repeater signal. So I can't have my cake and eat it, if you will.
Ah, okay, I see. All right. You see, now that's what I was planning on doing with some of these HTs. I was planning on getting like one of those little 50-watt amplifiers or 100-watt amplifier like Malin brought to the meeting last month. And start using the HTs, start getting a little more use out of them. But now that you're telling me that the receiver's off, I've got to really check that out before I buy any equipment. Alpha Charlie 2 Alpha Echo. All right, that was really all I had on the 3D. See what anybody else is thinking about it, and I guess include the 2D, because I guess the 3D is really a clone of the 2D, just with a few added features. And you know what, man? Still, again, with that 700 milliwatt speaker, man, it's driving me crazy. They must have signed the contract or something. Why not just get a 1 watt speaker or something like that? And I don't understand that. AC2A, back over to net control.
AC2GS. My guess is that Yaesu bought a million of those audio amplifier circuits, and they're just sitting in a bin someplace, and they're not going to change the design until they run out of them. But that's just my jaundiced view. Malin, you wanted to say something on the subject.
Thank you, Roy. I wanted to comment on the FT3D. I really like that Yaesu finally included the feature to actually use the SD card, because, you know, even the FT2D, you can put an SD card, but you couldn't record on it, so it's great they finally added a recorder in the 3D. It's a feature I use regularly, by the way, on my Kenwood THD-74, and I find absolutely awesome for satellite work. I can just record the cues in the radio and do my logging after that without needing to carry a separate recorder, which is what I used to do. And the other thing is Bluetooth, which I also use on my Kenwood THD-74. That way I use the radio in the car, I use it with a headset, so let's say I'm doing satellite, I have enough cables dangling around me anyway, and by using the Bluetooth, that removes one cable with the headset, and by using the built-in recorder, that removes another cable as well, actually. So I found those features super useful on my Kenwood, and I know some ICOM radios have these features as well. And I guess some of the DMR radios now have them, so it's good that, you know, Yaesu finally decided to join the club and, you know, include these things. And let me drop in. I have a second comment. A second thing is about the receiver. Yeah, the FT2D does have a desensing problem when there's a strong signal present. It's very noticeable when you use the Yagi and listen for weak signals. Because when I listen for satellites, I've noticed that at the same inclination, at the same angle, so the satellites should have really the same signal strength, depending on the direction, I hear it well or not very well, or almost don't hear it sometimes. And I'm guessing that has to do with nearby repeaters. I'm not even sure if they have radio repeaters. I know there's a lot of police stuff around here. And I know there's a power station and railway, Long Island Railroad, and subway stuff, train yards. So I'm sure there's a lot of systems around me, and I've just noticed in certain directions the FT2D is basically as bad as my Belfang on receive, or almost as bad. On transmit, both radios are fine. When you take an HT, there are some compromises. You know, they have to fit in a very, very small package and price it reasonably, so of course there's compromises when you compare to a mobile radio or a desk radio, where you know, they have the space to put all the filtering you can dream of. And it comes down to filtering, because when I've added additional filtering on my own between the radio and the antenna, you know, bandpass filters, it actually helps. It helps a lot, actually. So it's just, you know, a matter of fitting the proper filtering in an HD. You just don't have the space for everything you might want to put in. And it's a design compromise that's just inevitable. Back to Ned from Kilo Golf to Charlie.
Yes, I agree with you, Milan. It's kind of globally present in HTs. That's why, you know, I'm not really dinging Yaesu. It's just the design of most HTs. Not much you can do. If your problem is desensing from a different band, as you mentioned, the police band or some other band, not the UHF or VHF that you're interested in, it's not that difficult to get something with the selectivity to act as a bandpass. If you're getting desense from a fellow VHF transmission locally, that becomes problematic, because in order to have a high enough selectivity to be able to clip something that's only 600 kilohertz away from the signal that you're looking for, requires really that you got to involve yourself with cavities. Okay, that's the only way that you're really going to get the amount of attenuation and the narrow notch of that's necessary for something on the same band. Milan, I only heard your last syllable. You want to repeat yourself?
That was me, KD2MSU.
How we recognize, but I also thought it was earlier Milan said something, so if it was Milan, you know, say what you want to say, Milan, or if it wasn't Milan, then and we'll move on to you, Howie.
Thanks, Roy. Yes, I had one more comment that I thought of. In my testing, actually, I had, and it's not a very extensive testing, because, you know, I don't have a huge collection of HDs, but I found that my Titerra MD380, which is just a 70-centimeter band radio, actually did a lot better than pretty much any HD I had at the time, because it is designed for a single band. So, you know, if just saying it out there, if someone, you know, needs a good radio for any specific band, usually the design decisions are more easily implemented if someone was designing a radio for that band. I'm not talking about that specific radio. I'm just saying if someone, you know, is having desensing problems on a band, on a specific band, having a radio designed only for that band without a general coverage receiver, you know, you're probably going to get good filtering that, you know, rejects everything other than the band of interest, and, you know, you might even, you know, they might even include better handling of strong signals within the band, especially if the radio is built for commercial usage. Because from what I understand by reading stuff online, radios intended for commercial usage usually fare better with strong signal rejection, or at least so people say. You know, I haven't lab tested any of this stuff, but it is the impression I got, because the MD380 was designed also for commercial usage on 70 centimeters, and was actually a very sensitive receiver that was able to detect weak signals and didn't seem to have any problems with the desensing like some other radios I tried. Until I got the Kenwood PHD-74, that one just has a great receiver, but it's not a fair comparison with Yaesu SE2D, because, you know, that Kenwood radio costs twice as much, so... you know, I'm not saying the SE2D is a bad radio for this. I think for the price, it's a very good compromise. And yeah, if someone wants to pay twice as much, yeah, they'll get a better receiver. It's not exactly surprising. All right, back to Ned. Thanks, Roy. Kilo Golf to Charlie.
Well, most of the time you get what you pay for. Occasionally, unfortunately, you don't. But the Yaesu models, though, are going up in... The 3DR, and Joe can Tell me if I'm wrong or not. I think it's going for 500 and change, which is a nice piece of change indeed. But yeah, the problem is with multi-bands. If you limit yourself to a single band, it probably doesn't require a lot of expense and engineering genius to build a slightly more selective front end. Although I think the general tendency of HTs these days are to be wider and wider and more open, I'm going to be surprised if, other than, say, a $35 Baofeng entry, they sell that many single-band HTs as the future progresses. Howie, you wanted to say something?
Sorry, I think Howard had a comment. I can go after him.
Yes, well, no, by the way, those are fireworks at the ballpark. Joe and Roy, if you're hearing that, because it's only about 2,000 feet from me. Okay, well, I was going to ask, when they make an HT, is it very hard to make a full duplex system within that little box, the little handheld radio?
Comment.
Hold on. Please, comment.
I want to respond about the full duplex stuff because I have some experience with that. Basically, the only company that does this reliably in an HT is Kenwood right now. Linko has made attempts. There's Chinese companies that have made attempts. Yaesu, as far as I know, has not made any attempts, or not in a long while. Maybe way in the past. I'm only familiar with more recent radios. And I don't think ICOM has made any attempts for HTs. Now, for mobile radios and base station radios, all companies have models that do this and do this successfully. But in an HT only, the Kenwood THD-72 does this well. It's full duplex, both VHF, UHF, and UHF, VHF. Now, some Chinese companies manage it one way, but not the other way. I'm forgetting which way it was. Was it transmit on 2 meters and receive on 70 centimeters, or the other way around? But some of them manage it at least one way. I have a Woshin KGUV9D+, I think was the model, and it does full duplex in one of those directions, but it just descends internally in the other direction. And that's at least with satellite. And that's pretty common. So it's a difficult thing to do, and to do it well in an HD package, please.
Linko has radios. Maybe the 1.2 gigahertz. And what is the other band? I don't know if it has 220 on there. I think they said that's for good.
Left with a rather expensive model HT that not everyone, a lot of people out there still are looking for equipment that's roughly at the price point of a Baofeng, and you're not going to really get much other than a Baofeng for something like that, but that doesn't stop radio operators from looking for a really, really good deal.
Roy, you dabbled with Howard for half of your transmission. I was hearing him, and then when he stopped, I was hearing you.
Basically, just agreeing with you, Malen, that handy talkies are much more difficult to engineer for the selectivity required for duplexing. And then I guess if you throw a lot of engineering money and a lot of manufacturing money, you might be able to do it. But a lot of amateur radio operators don't want to pay that kind of a tax for high-end equipment.
I was just mentioning that a Linko, I think, they once had a 900 megahertz radio combined with 2 meters. I think they called that full duplex. Now it's 1.2 gigahertz, 23 centimeters with 220. I'm not sure what the other band is. But they claim it's full duplex.
Okay, I mean, the thing is that if you choose the band farther apart, it requires less engineering effort to isolate them. So, you know, if you're doing 144 and 444, it's more difficult than if you're doing 144 and 1.2 gigs. So I could see where engineering-wise, it would be significantly easier and less expensive to offer some kind of duplexing if one of the frequencies is really high on the amateur band.
So the 1.2 gigahertz uplink on, what was it? Oscar 92? I forgot what the prefix it was, but the 92 satellite. It's escaping me right now. But, there is some limited full duplex functionality. But if you want, like, complete full duplex from any band to any band, the mobile or desk radios, base station radios are best really for this.
Okay, so the bottom line is you get what you pay for, and engineers can only do so much with products. And, I'd be interested in knowing the kind of breakdown of how many people own what present manufactured models of HTs, you know, what the spread is, and how many, say, bottom-of-the-line Baofengs are sold for every single FT2DR or a Malenz, a Swiss Army knife, a handy-talkie. I would assume it's at least kind of 10 to 1, because knowing the average ham, they're probably, and every so often I'll bump into some odd people who've bought almost a dozen Baofengs. I'm not quite sure why, but they seem to have enjoyed numbers, if not quality.
Right, well, I think a lot of people buy Baofengs. They function fine. I'm using a Baofeng right now. I have my UV5R version 2 Plus that I've had since I became a ham, actually. That's the first radio I bought. And, works great for what it does, basically. It was fairly cheap, so I can take it anywhere without worrying about damaging it. It does its 5 watts when it's fully charged. The battery lasts a long time. It has the weather radio. If I'm hiking or something like that, or traveling, and I want to know what the weather conditions are, it does have a flashlight, and it's fairly simple to use if you don't need to program it. You know, if you program it with a computer, after that, to use it is fairly straightforward. So it definitely has its place. But as I mentioned, I have other radios throughout the price spectrum. All the way up to the Kenwood THD-74, which just includes all the functions you could think of, like SSB receive, APRS, D-Star, and a bunch of other stuff. Back to Ned from Kilo Golf to Charlie.
C2AE with a comment.
Joe.
You know, in all honesty, the only reason why I actually have a Baofeng UV5R is because everybody else has a UV5R or some kind of a Baofeng or a Wuxian or one of those Chinese radios. I felt left out. And I said, they're only $20. I said, these guys are going to think I'm cheap or whatnot. And I winded up getting one for $22. So that's why I have one. And it sits on a charger and it's on my shelf. And I don't think it's been off that charger for about a good year. Well, only when I clean AC-280. Back over to deck control.
I second the sentiment. My model is a B5, because I guess I had to be different. But it's a Baofeng. It's very cost-effective. But what it does, it's an incredible deal. And so I can't imagine why anyone wouldn't include it in their collection. I would not put it at the front of my collection. I kind of consider it a disposable radio. You know, if I'm out in the monsoon or something, I'd rather, if I have to lose a HT, I'd rather lose my Baofeng than say, my old ICOM IC92AD or my newer Yaesu FT2DR. It gives you as much bang for the buck as you're going to get. It's sort of a shame to me that the FCC doesn't just hand out Baofengs when people get their tech licenses.
Comment?
What?
I've actually heard of some clubs give out bell things once you pass the tech exam to enhance to get them on the air. I don't know if it's part of a membership package, if like you join after the session and you pay your membership dues and you get a bell thing with that, or where they just hand them out. But I read about something like that, you know, basically to make sure that people have something to start with. And of course, you know, they pre-program it with their club repeater and stuff like that, so those people can, you know, get on the air as soon as they get their call sign and, you know, get in touch with the other club members.
At one point, Limark was talking about doing that, that if you went to the VE exam and you passed your exam and you joined the club, they were thinking of giving away a free bow funk. I don't think they ever actually decided to do that. It just stayed as a good idea. They had a whole bunch of ideas. One of their ideas was they wanted to do a kind of a version of now they do with the handouts that I give people at RVE exams. So they kind of contacted me and asked if it was okay with me if they kind of do something similar. But I don't think that they ever got around to it. So I have heard people suggesting that. I haven't heard anyone actually doing it. Again, I think because amateur radio operators tend to be a little on the tight side, so most you know, memberships to clubs aren't really that much more than the $20 or $25 it takes to buy these things. So I don't know if a club is willing to take that type of a hit. It would be a very nice thing for them to do, and I think it would be more effective over the long haul, but who knows.
Comments?
Yes, with Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. Anyone have any questions or comments? Just hit the push-to-talk button. Give us your first name and your call sign.
Regarding the Volfangs, they should make a raffle. You know, you pay a dollar or two extra above your club membership, and they give away one radio, possibly even a better radio than the Volfang.
Yeah, that's an option. We sort of we don't do it with Balfunks. During the holiday party, I generally bring in something like an ARRL handbook or the antenna handbook or some other big book, and we raffle those things off. But you know, it you know, if we had enough people and enough raffles, I guess it would be cost-effective, because the whole point is the club doesn't really want to lose any money on something like that. Not necessarily gain a lot, but not lose much. And, you know, most of our active members who show up for these things already have a couple of handy-talkies here and a base station there. So it's the guys who just come for the BE exam who aren't quite on the air yet who probably would benefit the most with a Balfunk.
Pull up one of those radios and use it as a scanner. Put in police, EMS, and fire department. Everything else in the city has really switched to the trunk systems. So that's why I finally got the unit in SDS 100. So I can continue listening. There's a lot of things on there I didn't even know about. But still, you could use these radios as a basic scanner. You just look, go to radio reference. If your area hasn't switched to a trunk system, and you could plug in the frequencies, the conventional frequencies into your HTs, works fine.
Yeah, it certainly is cost effective. You won't get the trunking of the modern technology, and you got to kind of jump over that technological speed bump that is FTDI pirated USB RS-232 converters, where inevitably out of every 10 people who tries to program their Balfunk, one or two kind of scratch their head and don't understand why their Windows doesn't seem to be working with that cable.
But yeah, like I said before, it's very cost effective. I have nothing against people having a Baofeng. I own a Baofeng. I suggest people buy Baofengs. I would rather they not depend solely on Baofengs, which some people do. Some people, you know, they just came in for a tech license to get access to our frequencies, and they get a Baofeng for $25, and that's where their hobby ends. I think that's kind of a limitation on their part, but no. But I have nothing against Baofengs. Not too many people talk about Wuxons these days. They must not be getting as much love as, say, Anytone or a TYT. And for all I know, they're all made in the same damn factory.
Comment?
I can receive. If you order enough of them, they'll put your name on it.
Very possibly. Malen, you wanted to say something.
Thanks, Roy. I wanted to say about the ocean radios. Actually, I think the reason they're not as popular is that they are pricier than the Baofengs and the BTECs and all those radios. I have one, and it is definitely a few ideas higher quality than any of the Baofeng or even TYT offerings. And I got it actually for using satellites. And it has full duplex, and it has two receivers, and the user interface is much, much more refined than anything you find on any Baofeng, which is why it's more expensive. So, and I think that's you know, once you get to the price range of that radio, it starts competing with used radios from Yaesu, or even the cheaper radios from Yaesu, and like especially the Chinese-made Yaesus. So, there's a lot of competition in that segment of the market, so that's why you won't see that much Wuxians.
I guess it's also people fall in love with new shiny objects. If you go to YouTube, you'll see a lot of people. Usually it's starting to fade with the MD-380. There were a lot of YouTubes promoting the MD-380, and this week they're pushing Anytone 878s, and next week they'll push something else that has a couple of other little flashy features. So it's the nature of any consumer electronics. I remember before Baofeng was that terribly popular, where the cheap Chinese handy-talkie was the Wuxon, or Wuxian, or however one would want to pronounce it. But Baofeng just kind of dropped the entire market. I mean, how could you compete with a $25 radio? Most radios, if you buy a plastic case for it, cost more than $25. So that's, I don't know how the Chinese make any profit doing almost anything that they do. I assume somewhere there must be a profit somewhere. Again, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra with the Kings County Radio Club TechNet. And if anyone has any closing comments, questions, answers, statements, what have you, before we shut it down for tonight, feel free. Now's the time. Okay, Doc, this net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each month. Our next meeting will be August 7th. We offer a free meeting technical question and answer session, much like this net, from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., as time allows. Our regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., depending upon the number of points that are covered. We also have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on this repeater, as well as a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month at 9 p.m. We have a weekly net featuring Yaesu's Fusion Digital Technology every Thursday at 9 p.m. on our club repeater, KC2RC. If you can communicate using Fusion technology, please join in. We offer an audio stream of the Fusion net on the Internet, as well as all audio transmissions of our club repeater at stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank for their generosity. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. So it's time to roll this all up and shut this all down, but we'll be back to do this all again August 14th, and you're all welcome to join us. I'd like to thank all the people that participated tonight, and especially my co-host, Jason, WF2N. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So, this is Roy, AC2GS. I'm going clear now and getting out of here. Until next time, guys, be well. Bye.
Hey, thank you, Roy. KD2MSU 73.
Thank you, Roy, for a good net again. AC2AE.
Thanks, Roy.
WF2N 730.